You're listening to an encore performance of The Jim Engster Show, so please hold your calls.
This is Jim Engster. Coming today on the show, we'll visit with Timmy Teeple, the former chief of staff for Governor Bobby Jindal. He was with the governor before he became the governor, and Timmy Teeple will talk about his long association with Governor Jindal. Last night, a big success story for the Jindal administration as the education initiatives cleared the Louisiana House of Representatives, and the action was not complete until about 1:30 this morning, so a sleep-deprived Timmy Teeple will be with us to talk about what's happening in the next step with pension reform, of course, a major objective in the days to come at the session. And, of course, tomorrow is the GOP presidential primary in Louisiana. All this today on 89.3 WRKF, but first the news from National Public Radio.
You're listening to an encore performance of The Jim Engster Show, so please hold your calls.
This is Jim Engster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Kevin Gallagher producing, and our guest in studio is Timmy Teeple, the former chief of staff for Governor Bobby Jindal, a man who's been around the political block since he was a teenager. He went off to Washington from Baton Rouge, and he has been a profound person in the Jindal administration. He is now independent from the administration, not officially connected, but of course he is at the side of the governor, and last night was a major victory for the Jindal administration with the Louisiana House of Representatives backing the education bill for the state. And we will talk with him about this and much more. If you'd like to join the conversation, 297-5633 or 877-217-5757. A reminder that tomorrow is the primary day for Louisiana Republicans, where the action is focused mostly with Mitt Romney and Rick Santorum and Newt Gingrich and Ron Paul out trying to coax Louisiana Republicans into going to the polls and voting for their particular quest for the White House. And 20 of the 46 delegates will be chosen tomorrow with caucuses to determine the rest. And following that, we'll see what happens in November, and it should be interesting nationally, although in Louisiana it would be expected that the Republican nominee would have a strong advantage based on what happened in 2008. President Obama received just 39% of the votes in Louisiana 4 years ago, and he is on the ballot tomorrow as well. So Democrats will also go to the polls tomorrow to vote in the primary, and there are two candidates opposing President Obama. We'll talk about the Republican primary, but as far as what's happening at the Capitol right now, it's somewhat of a chaotic place. Timmy, what do you think about last night or early this morning?
Well, it was a big victory. Education reform is an issue that has been at the forefront in Louisiana for a number of years. Mike Foster made some big changes, and Governor Jindal decided to make it his marquee issue going into the second term. Passing it out of the House, it's only halfway done. There's still a lot of debate left to do. It's got to go through a couple of Senate committees and then Senate floor and then back over for concurrence. But it was a big victory.
How long do you think the process will take? 61 House members voted for the bill last night that took 12 hours of debate. The governor seems to have a legislative numerical advantage based on party affiliation. Will this be a breeze through the Senate?
Well, I don't think anything's ever a breeze through the Senate. I think that there will be a lot of debate, a lot of discussion, a lot of tough questions. But at the end of the day, I believe it will get done. Right now, if you look at where education is in Louisiana, ranking between 46th and 49th in the country, I think the general sense is that's just not acceptable. We can't as a state continue to lag behind everyone else. We have to do something. We have to reform it. We have to provide children with more options and more equal opportunities.
297-5633 is your number, and we will go to the phone lines in just a moment. If you're outside the area, it is 877-217-5757. You may reach us at jim@wrkf.org or tweet us at WRKF using the hashtag Jim Inkster. Now, there are some who say the rapid pace is a bit much. How do you answer those who say this should be a more deliberative process?
I think that there's a sense of urgency, but I don't think it has been rapid. This is an issue that has been debated in Louisiana for as long as I've been alive. We've been talking about the need to reform education. During the campaign, we ran a number of ads and campaigns and Bessie races talking about these very issues. How do we deal with tenure? How do we deal with providing more choices and charter schools? These are issues we talked about through the campaign cycle. And then as early as December, the governor started meeting with stakeholders and talking to folks. He unveiled it publicly months ago. You've had over 16 hours of debate in the House committee, another full day yesterday, over 13 hours of debate yesterday in the House. And we're only halfway through, not even halfway through yet, the process. So I don't think it's moving very fast at all. I think there's a sense of urgency that we need to get it done, but it's been a deliberate process.
Well, you got it through the House in 10 days, so that's pretty fast by conventional standards. I don't know if it's fast for the Jindal administration, but it's fast for what's happened at the state capitol through the years. And for those unfamiliar with Timmy's background, he's an interesting man. He left Baton Rouge when you were 18.
That's right.
And you went to Washington.
Mm-hmm.
What caused this?
Had an interest in politics. And I was involved in homeschooling. My parents had homeschooled me. Went up to D.C. to work for the National Homeschool Association, handling grassroots lobbying. And I remember the first couple of months I was there, it was in 1994, and the House of Representatives in D.C. Decided that they were going to try to pass a law that would outlaw homeschooling in Congress. And so my introduction to grassroots lobbying was this incredible threat on freedom of parents to homeschool their children. We ended up mobilizing people to call their legislators, their congressmen. The bill ended up coming up, and it failed 434-1, with the author of the amendment being the only person to vote for his amendment. And then, of course, that preceded the Republican takeover of Congress in 1994. George Miller, Democrat from California, was the education chairman who pushed that, and that was my introduction to D.C. politics.
You were 18 then. You're 37 now, meaning you spent more than half of your life in politics. And you've been busy away from the Capitol in Washington and the Capitol in Baton Rouge. You have six kids.
That's right.
And they're 12, 11, 11, 9, 7, and 4.
Yep.
I got it right.
You
and their
right.
names are?
Virginia, Thomas and William are my boys. Georgia, Montana, and Tennessee.
So four of them are named after states.
Yeah. I tried to convince my wife to name one of them Louisiana, but didn't go over too well.
Well, there's always time.
There's always time.
But your wife has had six children in 8 years, so she is a busy lady, and she's living with a guy who I think you would say is a driver. You're not one who sits around and does nothing and just is there. You do things.
That's right. She's a saint.
Yeah. Must be.
Mm-hmm.
Well, Governor Jindal, you can often learn, or I don't think often, you always learn more about somebody in political life when they lose than when they win. And in 2003, when he ran the first time, his first election, he ran for governor, and he almost won. He did run way ahead in the primary and then lost to Kathleen Blanco, 52-48%. 2004, he's deciding what he wants to do with the rest of his life. When he decides he wants to be in politics, he wants to run for office, wants to run for Congress in the suburban New Orleans area. And that's when you met him.
Actually, I met Bobby in 2003.
But you didn't work for him.
Didn't work for him.
How did you meet?
We had a mutual friend in D.C. He was working for Department of Health and Hospitals in D.C. HHS, and a mutual friend was also working there. Bobby was looking for a campaign manager. I was at the RNC at the time, the Republican National Committee. I was deputy political director there, and this mutual friend put us in touch with each other and said, Bobby's looking for a campaign manager. Tim, are you interested in going back to Louisiana? So I went in and interviewed with Bobby. I am no good at job interviews. Bobby has told me that on a number of occasions.
Well, at the time, this is 2003.
2003. So he ended up hiring somebody else to run the campaign for that campaign.
So Governor Jindal never won an election without Timmy Teeple, and he's never lost an election with Timmy Teeple. So his success, I'm sure, is quite likely a selling point for On Message, the firm of which Timmy is a partner, one of five partners based in Baton Rouge and in Washington, and you have stayed in Baton Rouge by design.
That's right. That's right.
Now, you have close associates, in fact, some relatives working for the Jindal administration. So it's not like the Teeple influence still isn't there.
And Bobby is a client of On Message still. So he tells me, you know, I still work for him.
How often do you talk?
Oh, we talk a good bit.
Every day?
Yeah, when I'm in town, we get together as often as possible, not only in the work relationship, but as friends. You know, he's one of my best friends. And so we talk often, at least once a day.
That side of the governor we rarely hear about. I know you're his friend, but I don't know who else is close to him. Are you his closest confidant?
Bobby has a number of good friends. You know, he is somebody who has at a very young age, been put into very important positions, 24 DHH. He's somebody who is incredibly bright and driven, moved fast, and you know, worked in D.C., but made a lot of lasting relationships in a lot of these positions, and somebody who enjoys to spend time with his friends and family, which is hard when you're governor. You know, it's hard to be able to relax and enjoy friends and family because of the demands of the job are intense.
What is the biggest misconception about him?
I may be too close to him to know what the misconceptions are out there. I know that you know, he's a very compassionate person. And he's someone who cares deeply about the state and in changing the state. I'd probably say one of the biggest misconceptions that I see is a lot of times people interpret what he does through a lens of are there national ambitions, and that couldn't be further from the truth. He's somebody who grew up in Louisiana, loves Louisiana, has always dreamed of being the governor of Louisiana so that he could see the state turn into a state where his friends didn't have to leave to find mm-hmm. jobs, where we could live the American dream right here in Louisiana. And that has always been his goal from a young kid. And I think that that's probably a misconception.
He's 40 years old. Do you think at some point, I'm not talking about 4 years from now, or it could happen, but at some point he'll run for president?
I think that he could die without any regrets by not running for president. I think that he could live the rest of his life and be proud of the work he did as governor. He may want to run for governor again sometime as a young man.
Well, he could.
You know, it's politics is a strange business that's unpredictable, and you don't know what's going to happen 4, 8, 16 years from now.
Well, I would say, as one who follows politics and talks with people, that there's probably a two-thirds chance at some point in Bobby Jindal's life he will run for president. Would you disagree with me?
Two-thirds? Wow.
Two-thirds.
Is it 66%?
Yeah.
What's the Vegas line on it?
Well, I guess that's 2-1. So I, the fact that you're not saying no way, I think, indicates that at some point Bobby Jindal might run for president. And that would be good for Louisiana, I would think, if he ran and if he won.
I tell you, he is somebody who I think would make a remarkable president. He'll be successful in whatever he decides to do in life.
All right. Well, we'll be back with Timmy Teeple, and we will go to the phone lines after this one-minute timeout.
You're listening to an encore performance of The Jim Engster Show, so please hold your calls.
This is Jim Engster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. Timmy Teeple, the former chief of staff of Governor Bobby Jindal, now a partner in On Message, a major political operative in Baton Rouge and in Washington. He spent 19 of his 37 years practicing politics. Sarah on Highland, we start with you. Please be brief. Hi, Sarah. Good morning. You're on the air with Timmy.
I have two questions. One, what is the dollar amount of each voucher, or is this a blank check to go to any private school? And my second question is, where's the accountability to the private schools if the fourth and eighth graders don't have to take the leap and the schools don't have to be graded like public schools?
All right. Dollar amount and accountability.
Well, I'll be the first to say I'm not the best education policy person, but I as I understand it, for these scholarships, they will be equal to or less than the current amount being spent per student in the public schools.
And accountability, what about the LEAP tests and the differences between private and public schools?
Right now, the way it works in New Orleans is that the scholarship students take the same tests that the other students take, and those tests, the parents are able to see how they're doing and make decisions. And I think that the idea is that parents are going to make the best decisions for their children. They're going to, you know, they'll be able to see how they're doing in a private or parochial school compared to the public school, and they have that decision of whether to keep them in the private school or put them back into a public school. And right now, parents don't have that choice. Well, not all parents. Some parents do have the choice to put their kids in private school. I think that, you know, for me, for instance, and those who can afford to put their kids in a private school or afford to move to a school district where there are good public schools, those kids have choice. But the kids who don't have choice are the parents who can't afford to move to a better school district or can't afford to put their kids in a private school. And so they are trapped in a school that may not be meeting the needs of their kids. So how do we provide these kids with an opportunity to succeed? Kids don't get a second chance to grow up.
Should the public schools and private schools have the same standards, though, where if a kid in a private school flunks a LEAP test, he's held back like they are in public schools?
I think as this debate continues, what we need to be careful of is that we shouldn't use this as an excuse to increase government control over private and parochial schools. I think if you look at the vast majority of folks, one survey I saw, 80% of those in Louisiana believe that private and parochial schools are doing a good job teaching their kids. And I think it's a mistake to try to use education reform as an excuse to expand government control over those schools by mandating certain curriculum or tests. I think that these schools are doing well. I think that what we need to be doing is focusing on how do we improve the public school system, the schools that the government currently runs. Let's focus on improving those and providing parents whose kids are stuck in failing schools, trapped in failing schools, a choice to be able to go to a private school. But the idea that we're just going to, in the name of education reform, increase government control on private schools is, I think, exactly the wrong thing to do.
So it is acceptable, based on the results, for private schools to have different accountability standards than public schools.
Sure, they're private. And parents are making the choice to be there.
But if public money is being used to send kids to private schools, does that change the equation?
I don't think so. I think if a parent has the choice to send their kid to a certain school and the kids are taking the same test that they would in public school and the parent can make the decision as to whether that's the best place for them, I think that's fine. That's my opinion. I know that according to an amendment passed last night, John White will be designing some accountability standards on the scholarship students. But from my perspective, I think that parents know what's best for their children. And I think we need to trust parents. They know better than government.
297-5633 for Timmy Teeple, the former chief of staff of Governor Bobby Jindal, his close associate and a man who's now in practice himself in the political and media world and on message. Cindy and Hammond. Cindy, please be brief. You're on with Timmy Teeple.
Thanks. I'm very interested in the comment about the overreaching arm of government, because it seems to me that this American Legislative Exchange Council model is actually setting up layers of bureaucracy and putting in things that don't seem to go along with conservative philosophy. That's what confuses me about this whole education reform piece.
All right. Would you respond, Timmy?
I'm not familiar with the American Legislative Exchange Council's model.
All right. 297-5633. Nancy in St. Gabriel. Nancy, you're on the air with Timmy Teeple. Please be brief. Hi, Nancy.
Yes. With the number one goal of any academic reform, any school reform, being to increase academic outcomes for children, and the voucher scores coming out of New Orleans being at the bottom, lower than the recovery school district test scores, how can you and the governor and anybody else in good conscience think that it's a victory to promote an education reform that is an academic failure, as are the charter schools in the Baton Rouge area? The majority of them have school performance scores that are lower than the schools that they replaced.
Well, I think if you look at those scores, you know, what you had with the scholarship students in New Orleans is failing schools, students in these failing schools coming over into private schools. I thought the interesting statistics in those scores was that the scholarship students' rate of improvement far exceeded the rate of improvement of public schools statewide. And I think that's what we need to be looking at. What environment provides the maximum improvement in these kids' education? And so far, I've been happy with the improvement we've seen in the scholarship students. It's been a vast increase over the statewide public schools.
Marcia in Clinton. Marcia, you're on the air with Timmy Teeple.
Thank you. I have two questions. The first one is, since many private and parochial schools have attendance requirements, or rather requirements to allow you to even attend their school, you must pass certain tests with certain scores, how are they going to handle having kids who cannot pass the requirements for getting into those schools get into those schools using vouchers? And then my second question is, schools that have been historically, let's say, less than welcoming of minority students, how is the state going to make sure that these schools open their doors to all students with vouchers and not just cherry-pick the colors they want?
Well, as to your last point, there's absolutely no place in the state for racism. And I think that, you know, schools, you have to admit, folks, regardless of race, there's absolutely no place for that in the state. I think that, you know, as we get into all the details, and I may not be the best person to discuss the details, but what I will say is that, you know, when you get into where we are currently in the education system, we have 44% of the public schools in Louisiana receive a D or an F. That is unacceptable. We cannot, as a state, be proud or be comfortable with 44% of our schools and over 250,000 of our children in schools that are failing. We have to want more for the kids in Louisiana. We have to want a better education. We have to be, and they only get one chance to grow up. They don't get a second chance. A kid stuck in a failing school right now cannot wait another 10 years for that school to improve. We need to be providing them with the opportunities now to receive a better education. It's the moral thing to do. It's the fair thing to do. We shouldn't let a child's the income level of their parents determine the value of their education. You know, we can't in America guarantee everyone the same results. That would be un-American. But we very well should guarantee everyone the same opportunities. And right now in Louisiana, every child does not have an equal opportunity to get a great education. That's wrong. We need to be about providing that chance for every child.
Now, the legislation covers schools that have grades of not only D and F, but C, and some say that may be a reach. What do you think about that?
Well, you know, still in a C school, you're going to have one-third of the students below grade level. Amendment was passed yesterday that said all the when you're looking at these scholarship slots, you have to make the first preference goes to DNF students in DNF schools, and the C students don't have an opportunity. The students in C schools don't have an opportunity until everyone in the every parent who's interested in from a DNF school is taken care of. And so I think that took care of a lot of people's concerns. But, you know, I think erring on the side of more choice, more parental choice and decision-making is a good thing. I think that C schools, one-third of the students being below school grade average is, you know, not where we need to be as a state.
If 380,000 public school students are eligible for the vouchers or scholarships, and only 2,000 seats are available, how is this going to be squared?
Well, that's why the scholarships, even though it's received a lot of attention, it's just one part of the overall education reform package of the governor. You have to not only provide opportunities to those trapped in failing schools, but you have to provide principals and teachers and superintendents with the tools they need to improve the current public schools. You know, in Louisiana, the traditional public schools is going to be the way a majority of our students are educated, and we need to make sure that we're able to improve those and improve them quickly.
We're hearing the voice of Timmy Teeple, a man who is involved intricately in the Jindal administration. He was in the Capitol as chief of staff the last few years and now is a practitioner outside the Capitol in On Message. But he was at the house that Huey built this morning at 1:30. His lawmakers voted 61-42. Was there a big celebration when this happened?
Oh, I think that there was everyone relieved that the long day was over and go to bed and get ready for the next one.
And there definitely is a next one. And after this, as you know, there will be another battle to fight. What about pension reform? Is that one going to be an easy one?
Absolutely not. Pension reform is another issue that is going to generate a lot of excitement. It's an issue that long term needs to be addressed. We have, and it's not unique to Louisiana. I think every state, every city in the country, and our country, we face a large amount of debt associated with pensions. And the amount the debt service is increasing, the percentage of the budget that it is consuming, you know, at some point, we've got to address it. And the earlier you try to address it, if you start to turn the dial on it now, it is, you know, it may be a little painful, but it's better to address it early than waiting until you hit the cliff. Because once you hit the cliff, you know, we've seen the way that story ends. You look, you know, across the ocean, you look at Greece and Portugal and Spain and the issues they're facing, and that would be irresponsible to allow it to get to that point before we address it. It's an issue that we need to address sooner rather than later.
As far as how it will affect people, that seems to be the major bone of contention for people at the Capitol. some of whom may be, let's say, 50 years old, and they've worked in state government for 25 years, and they're planning on retiring at 55, and now they may be facing the prospect of retiring at 67. What do you tell those folks?
Well, I think that there's not many people in this world who can look forward to retiring at 55. I've got six kids. I'm working until I'm 90, I'm sure. I'm not sure. How old are you? Are you going to plan to retire at?
No, I'm getting closer and closer to 55, but I'm sure I'll still be working then. And that's my choice, though. I didn't choose to go into state government, but if I had, I might be very well planning to retire at 55, taking my retirement, going to work in the private sector, and making a living there, and doing hopefully very well. But I might not have that option under the new configuration. So is it fair?
Well, I that's hard to say. You know, there was a lot of people before the Great Recession who were planning on retiring. And in 2008, we hit the markets turned downwards, and people realized, I'm going to have to work a lot longer to make ends meet. I think that as we look at state government and the costs associated with it, and the ability to meet our needs, and I think as a state, there's just the money is not there to continue on the way we've been continuing on. Eventually, the money runs out, and we can't meet any of the obligations. And so we have to start making decisions now. And, you know, it's at some point the money runs out. You can't, you know, it's what Margaret Thatcher used to say. The problem with socialism is eventually you run out of other people's money. We've got a $18 billion unaccrued liability.
Unfunded accrued liability?
Unfunded accrued liability. $18 billion. That's, you know, we don't have the money to pay for it.
Something needs to be done, but...
And every year, the percentage of debt service goes up. Now, I don't know what the final bill will look like. I'm sure that there will be adjustments here and there, and they will try to make it as equitable and as fair as possible at the end of the day. But at some level, you know, there is going to have to be a turning of the dial some extent on pensions so that we can get ahead of this curve.
297-5633 for Timmy Teeple, and we will go to the phone lines with him. And as I said, it was a short night for Mr. Teeple, who was at the Capitol at 1:30 this morning, as the House voted 61-42. In passing Governor Jindal's education plan, and there were there's three bills actually that are the focal points, but they have cleared the House. They're on their way to the Senate. Next week will be interesting, and the session will be fascinating as we approach the June 4th bell to end the festivities in Baton Rouge for this particular session. Now, it's an ambitious agenda, no doubt about it, Timmy Teeple. Was thought given about doing this incrementally, or what happened to say let's do two major things at the same time, two major things and a lot of other important items as well?
You know, Bobby, ever since I started working with him, he's told us we'll run out of time before we run out of things to do, and I think we want to get as much done as possible.
Okay, well, we'll be back with Timmy Teeple after this 1 minute timeout. You may also reach us at jim@wrkf.org if you're having some challenges getting through. The lines have been busy. We'll return in 1 minute.
You're listening to an encore performance of The Jim Inkster Show, so please hold your calls.
This is Jim Inkster. You're listening to 89.3 WRKF in Baton Rouge. 297-5633 is your number. Timmy Teeple, the former chief of staff of Governor Bobby Jindal, is with us, and he will be entertaining your inquiries. Please be brief. He is now a practitioner as a political operative and consultant for On Message, a firm based in Baton Rouge and in Washington with five partners, of which Timmy is one. As far as your fascination with politics, going off to Washington at 18 years old and saying, hey, I want to work in the political world. This would have been 1993, first year that William Jefferson Clinton was president of the United States. What was the catalyst?
Wow. You know, I think I had an interest in politics since my first campaign when I was 15. A friend of mine, a guy by the name of Jeff Andrews, ran for state rep. I guess Jeff was 24 at the time, here in Baton Rouge. And I worked on his campaign, and it just was exciting and invigorating, and felt like you're doing something that making a difference. He didn't win that race, but it's something that got me interested in it. I've always had a love of history and you know, the flow of events and how governments interact, and you know, we've got a unique system here in America. I mean, we have, in other countries, they fight wars to decide who's in charge. And here in America, we've got this wonderful democracy where you can run campaigns and peacefully elect people. And so I've always been fascinated with it. Once Clinton got elected, I grew up with Reagan was the president.
Well, you were 5 when he was elected, 13 when he... Or just about, yeah, he was 13 when he left, almost 14. Mm-hmm. So he made a big impression on you?
He did. I guess my first memory was the Challenger explosion speech. You know, President Reagan gave the speech to reassure the children that, and the line that stuck to me was when he said, I guess it was at the end of the speech, that they slipped the surly bonds of earth to touch the face of God. And that, you know, just he was such a great communicator. And then, of course, George Bush, and when Clinton got elected, it just seemed like we had this, you know, for a young guy, major shift. I'd only known President Bush and President Reagan, and all of a sudden we had Clinton, and you know, being a Republican and Democrat in the White House, I was too young when Carter was president, didn't know about him being president, so it seemed all new and different and kind of scary, and wanted to go have an impact and see if I could help other Republicans get elected.
Now, you have made no secret of the fact that you're a man of faith. And in the Republican Party, there is a wing that quite often we refer to as the evangelical wing of the party. Would you say you're a member of that group?
Sure. I think so. I'm definitely an evangelical Christian. I put faith before politics, and so it's... I'm not sure I'd feel comfortable defining myself as part of a Christian, part of a Republican Party, because my faith is more important to me than politics. And so, but most of the folks I'm you know, comfortable with, and evangelicals.
Mm-hmm. Well, one of the issues that has been mentioned quietly, and in some cases not so quietly, about Governor Romney, who's now the front runner for the GOP nomination, is that he might not be palatable to evangelicals because he's a Mormon. Is that an issue?
I don't think so. I don't think it's an issue with evangelicals at all. I haven't heard that. I think that in a lot of the political battles, legislative battles, you know, you have dealing with family issues and things like that. Mormons and evangelicals and Catholics all tend to work together and sort of the pro-family, I guess, side of the party, where most evangelical Republicans are. So I think there's a comfort level with the politics there that I haven't heard many people concerned about it.
Mm-hmm. Can a person be a non-believer or a person of the Jewish faith or maybe even a Muslim and be effective in American politics?
Sure. I don't think that, you know, faith and politics are completely different. And I think that you have people of all faith involved in politics, and that's a good thing in America.
But part of the division between Democrats and Republicans, it seems, is in some cases based on an overall worldview that is based on their faith. And you, to all of us, our faith, if we have it, I think is the most important thing in our lives. But sometimes God speaks to us in different ways. Can you accept somebody who may be pro-choice, for example, who is a person. Can you be pro-choice and also be a believer in Jesus Christ?
Sure. Absolutely. I think that, you know, faith does drive my personal life, and it also informs how you engage in politics. I think that, though, for most evangelicals, when they're looking at who to vote for, and they're looking at what are their political beliefs, you know, and for me, I look at it as, you know, limited government, smaller government, you know, more liberty, more freedom. Government does have a role in protecting life and property and the defenseless. But for the most part, we need to encourage, you know, more freedom and less government. And so, you know, as you're working with candidates,
right,
you know, what's more important is what are they going to do in office? What are their political beliefs? What are their, you know, what is their philosophy on how they see the role of
right.
government? Jimmy Carter was an evangelical Christian, but if I was old enough at the time and had the opportunity, I don't think I would have worked for him.
If a Jimmy Carter type walked in your office at On Message and said, "Timmy, you know, I heard you today on the radio. You're a bright guy. You know politics. I think you can help me get elected, but I don't share your opinions or your views on some of these social issues." Would you say go somewhere else, or would you say come on in?
Well, it depends on what they are. You know, for me, the culture of life, right to life, pro-life issues are near and dear to my heart. You know, that's one of those motivating factors to me and being involved in politics. And so I would, you know, life's short, work for people you believe in. And we've got no shortage of candidates and potential clients to work with. And so I, you know, prefer to work with folks mm-hmm. I agree with philosophically.
Well, Raymond Strother has been on this show many times, and he started his career handling candidates of all political stripes, but has handled only Democrats for many years. My guess is that you handle Republicans.
That's right.
And Republicans exclusively.
That's right.
One of your new clients is Bill Cassidy, the congressman, who mm-hmm. I don't think has an opponent this year, but is he going to run for the Senate in 2014?
Well, it's too early to talk about that. It's he has a re-election in 2012. He has a new district that reaches down into Thibodeau and Houma, you know, he is focused on number one, serving the people of his district in Congress, he's got some great ideas in terms of reforming Medicaid. He's addressing some big issues in Congress, you know, with the plan to reform Medicaid, mm-hmm. Also dealing with beneficial dredging and looking at plans for to roll back this coastal loss and to build on our coastal restoration gains, and then also natural gas and those issues, energy mm-hmm. production. You know, his number one focus is on those issues, and then number two, he's got to win re-election. And politics is unpredictable. And
I think he's on his way to re-election, barring something really unusual happening. And somebody on the Republican side will run against Mary Landrieu in 2014 if she runs for re-election. Mm-hmm. And Congressman Cassidy might seem to be a guy who would be a strong prospect. And some mm-hmm. think that's why you're now working together, is that this is an eye not only on this election, but an eye on 2014.
Well, Bill and Laura are good friends, and I've known them for a good bit, and really appreciate the opportunity to work with them.
Okay. Gene on Perkins. Gene, please be brief. You're on with Timmy Teeple. Hi, Gene.
Yes. Thanks for having me. And morning, Jim.
Hi.
I was wondering what you thought the governor's position might be on the Boddy-White bill, which I guess there's two bills, but Boddy-White.
All right, he's fading out. He said the Boddy-White bill. I guess he's referring to the separate school district.
I haven't talked to Boddy or the governor about that bill. So,
okay, Paul in Opelousas. Paul, good morning. You're on. Thank you, Gene. Paul, you're on with Timmy Teeple.
How you doing, Jim? How you doing, Jimmy? Doing good.
Doing good.
Just a question I had on the voucher program. If it's used by those who need to or want to put their kids in a more progressive school, do you think there is enough private school classroom or seats to absorb all those people who want it? And after they're absorbed, what do you do with the rest?
Well, I don't know. My guess is that the demand will be fairly high for these scholarship slots. I think that general view is that a lot of parents aren't happy with the current state of their child's public school, and so they're going to be looking to want to take advantage of these scholarships and move, and demand on them is a good thing. If demand exceeds supply, then I think the way the bill has it set up is a lottery system that will make sure that those students that are in a D or F school are placed first before anyone else.
Sarah in Baker. Hi, Sarah. You're on with Timmy Tipo. Please be brief. Hi, Sarah.
Hi. Good morning. Thank you for having me. I appreciate the governor's push toward education reform. My question is, I understand that the number of vouchers may be limited and there will be children left in public schools. What will be done at those public schools to help them to have the freedom to make the progress that's necessary?
One of the bills that passed last night in the House was tenure reform that would... And I think that this is, you know, really makes a lot of common sense. We look back and we all have in our mind those teachers who just had a huge impact on our life. And we think, wow, I wish those folks, those teachers could be rewarded, could be paid a little more, could be given, you know, a higher, more pay because of the impact they're having on kids' lives. And unfortunately, as you look back and you remember some teachers, you think, wow, you know what, that's probably not the best role for them in life. They may, you know, being in the classroom may not be the best role for them. And the bill that passed last night gives principals and superintendents a little more flexibility in making those decisions in terms of rewarding good teachers and teachers who aren't having the impact needed on in terms of teaching kids who are ineffective. Providing them with the help to become effective, and if that doesn't work, then moving them out of the classroom.
297-5633. A few more minutes with Timmy Tipo, who's been kind enough to spend the hour with us tonight at the Gridiron Show, tonight and tomorrow night at the usual place on Florida Boulevard, the American Legion Hall. I understand I've got an email here from Jan Moeller. He says he's going to be playing you. I mean, he's a dead ringer, isn't he?
I think this is the weekend that Jan needs to shave his head.
I like that. I think he would look good with a shaved head, as do you. And I'm looking, Jeremy White will be playing Governor Jindal. Now, will there be a rebuttal? There's always been a rebuttal.
I understand there is a rebuttal. I've been, you know, we've had rave reviews on our rebuttal over the last several years, and I understand that there is a rebuttal that is worthy of everyone's expectations again this year, and that will be tonight.
Will you be in the rebuttal?
Unfortunately, the understudy is going to have to take my place in the rebuttal. Virginia is in a school play tonight, and so I'm gonna have to miss the Gridiron.
I bet you're really sad about that.
I'm disappointed, but fortunately, I think they got another teeple over there somewhere that they can throw into it.
All right, Abby on guard here. Please be brief. Hi, Abby. You're on with Timmy. Abby, are you there?
Hello?
Yes, you're on the air.
Yes, I understand the portion about the teacher tenure reform, but will there be flexibility as far as curriculum for failing schools?
All right, flexibility on curriculum, is that part of the package?
I do not know. I don't know enough about the issue in terms of what the current rules are on curriculum or what flexibility she's looking for.
And I've gotten many emails. I'm sorry I've been unable to read many of them today, but a few related to our conversation a few moments ago about faith and the governor. Now, he is obviously a man of faith. That is a big, probably the biggest part of his life. Is that a given?
Yes.
Do you pray together sometimes?
We do. Every time we have lunch, we bless the food together. We pray together. And so, yes, we do.
Do you pray beyond that for, like, world peace and state success and murder rate going down and poverty rate going down?
When we go to bless the food, it's not just praying, you know, to bless the food. You also pray for, you know, wisdom and courage and for the people of the state.
And I think most people on the left, the right, the middle, wherever they are, would say that's a good thing.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that the governor has made known that it's a big part of his life, and he's had quite a religious odyssey in his own life, hasn't he?
He has.
He's a Roman Catholic. You are an evangelical Christian,
mm-hmm.
right?
That's
so
right.
In the old days, people fought over that, but the two
We've
of you...
come a long way.
You've come a long way. Do you ever go to Mass?
Yes, I do.
You do? Yeah? So any chance that Timmy Teeple will ever run for office?
No.
No?
None at all.
So you got one big battle done, another one coming in the Senate. You think it's going to be a successful session?
I think it will. I think now's the time for education reform to pass.
All right. Well, thank you, Timmy. Good to visit with you. Thanks for spending an hour with us
today.
Thank
you, Jim.
Take care.
Appreciate
Hope to see you soon. And for Kevin Gallagher, I'm Jim Engster. Thank you for listening, and have a great weekend. Stay tuned.
Podcasts of The Jim Engster Show are available at wrkf.org. The Jim Engster Show is produced in association with the Louisiana Radio Network and is copyrighted by WRKF for the private use of its audience. Any other use of any portion of this program without the written consent of WRKF is prohibited. The views expressed on this program are those of the participants and do not necessarily reflect the views of WRKF, its officers, and members.